us, I think, okay. Manage.
Okay, perfect. Okay, good morning, good morning. So let's talk about some Rashi's at the Sneh. The Sneh is the first moment of Gilui Shechina. Moshe Rabbeinu will redefine Gilui Shechina. Moshe Rabbeinu is Mukhan Lenevor, the Rambam writes at all points. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu appear to Moshe at the Sneh? What are some of the messages that HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers to Moshe at the Sneh, through the imagery of the Sneh, and why is the Sneh chosen? So Rashi writes, Mitoch HaSneh, V'lo Ilan Acher, the Sneh and not other trees, Mishum Imo Anochi Bitzara, because the Sneh is a lowly bush, it's an ugly bush, it's a bush that gets trampled upon. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe through a more imposing tree. It wouldn't have conveyed that when Am Yisrael is in Mitzrayim, and Am Yisrael is suffering, the Shechina is also suffering. This is known, of course, in the Zohar, Shechinta Begalusa, that what affects the Jewish people in general, and in particular the departure from Yerushalayim, affects the Kadosh Baruch Hu Shechina. It was already conveyed to Yaakov more abstractly in Parshas Vayigash, Anochi Ered Imcha Mitzrayimah, V'Anochi Eelche Gam Alo. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov, I'm going to descend with you into Mitzrayim, and I will also ascend with you. So as the Jewish people decline, and the Jewish people suffer, Kadosh Baruch Hu Shechina also suffers. So when Kadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe in the Sneh, he's telegraphing to him that just like the Jewish people are downtrodden and being persecuted in Mitzrayim, Yaakov, I'm going to be about 10 minutes, so I'm going to be about 10 minutes if you're waiting for me. Just like the Jewish people are downtrodden in Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina can only reside within a Sneh. Now, of course, the Sneh will one day become Har Sinai. The Sneh will turn to Sinai because that's Har Elokim. But remember, Mitzrayim is a paradigm for all Galus. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting this paradigm. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe later on, Moshe says, how should I appear to you? How should I present the Jewish people to you? How should I present you to the Jewish people? So Hashem says, Ekia Asher Ekia. We try not to say the phrase Ehyeh because it's, the Gemara says in Shavuos, it's one of the shemos that if you're Mochek, you're over on Lotasin Kim. So we don't say the word, we say the word Ekia Asher Ekia because we don't want to say the phrase. So Rashi says that just like I was there for you in Mitzrayim, I'll be with you in future generations. So that already establishes Mitzrayim as a template for future Galuses and future Gulas. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting part of that template that when Am Yisrael suffers, HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffers as well. Mitoch HaSneh, again, language of Rashi, Mishum Imo Anochi Bitzara. Another aspect that HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishes for Moshe is as a leader. Moshe received Tzaras. So why does Moshe receive Tzaras? So Rashi says, because you said Lashon Hara about the Jewish people, because you said Vehein Lo Yaminu Li, they won't believe me, and they won't believe you, and therefore you receive Tzaras. Namely, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Moshe that as a leader, you can't highlight people's failures. You can't try to carp about their limitations. You want to try to build up their confidence. You want to see their positive sides. You want to see their strengths, rather than constantly highlighting and showcasing their weaknesses and slandering them and saying how terrible they are. And of course, this is Moshe's ultimate undoing, because Moshe has a storied career, but he gets replaced after the Mei Meriva, because in the Mei Meriva, he also turns and says, Shimun HaMorim, and he calls them people who are rebels or dissidents or people. He has a negative language about them. He doesn't speak about them in positive language. He says, Shimun HaMorim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe that because you said slander about the Jewish people, because you doubted their integrity and you doubted their ability to believe in me, so that you're going to receive Tzaras. So that we all know it's a famous Rashi. Moshe received Tzaras as a punishment for his Lashon Hara against the Jewish people. This turning of Moshe's hand into white was not just a magic trick to convince the Jewish people. It was a message to Moshe Rabbeinu about leadership. How do we know it's a message to Moshe Rabbeinu about leadership? Because of an earlier Rashi. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs the first miracle, the first sign, he tells Moshe, Mazeh biyadecha, what are you holding? So Moshe says, I'm holding a staff. So Hashem says, throw the staff on the ground, we'll turn into a nachash. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Moshe, Mazeh biyadecha, instead of writing Mazeh, Mem Hei, pause, Zayin Hei, which would be the normal way for the Torah to write, Mazeh biyadecha, the Torah writes one word, Mem Zayin Hei, Mazeh biyadecha. Namely, the Torah writes Mazeh, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu inquiring of Moshe, what are you holding, as if it could be read Mizeh. Mazeh, Mem Hei, pause. Zayin Hei would be Mazeh. Writing Mem Zayin Hei as one word allows it to be translated as not just Mazeh, but Mizeh. So Rashi writes, Lekach nichtav teva achas, lidrosh Mizeh. Mizeh shebiyadecha. What you just said about them in your hands, literally, atachayav lilkos. You have to be punished, shechashadeta b'ksherim, because you doubted their integrity. Now, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu telegraph it this way? Because what was Moshe really holding? Not just that he was holding Lashon Hara, that he had just said it immediately before Mizeh Shebiyadecha, but he was holding a staff. A staff signifies leadership. A staff liyasa shevet mehuda. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, it's a triple entendre. Mazeh biyadecha, what are you holding? Mizeh biyadecha, you just slandered them a minute ago. Biyadecha, you're still holding on to it. It's like literally palpable, just passed a moment ago. And look at what you're holding. You're holding a staff. Mazeh biyadecha, you're supposed to be a leader. You're supposed to hold the staff. A leader's not supposed to look at people's negativity. Not supposed to highlight their shortcomings. You're supposed to highlight their potential. You should be optimistic. You should convey confidence in people. People don't want negativity. People don't want to be led by people always looking at their failures. People want to feel confident. People want to feel optimistic. People want to feel like you believe in them. If you believe in them, then they'll typically rise to the challenge. That's generally a rule in life. If you set a certain bar for people of expectations, they want to reach those expectations. Especially if you're a leader, they want to show you that your confidence in them wasn't misplaced. So if you lower the bar for people, they'll act according to the bar. If you raise the bar for people and you show you believe in them, then typically they'll rise to the challenge. So it's really a triple entendre, not a double entendre. Mazeh biyadecha, Hashem is just inquiring. He wants to perform some oath, some sign with the staff. Mizeh biyadecha, you just said Lashon Hara, you're going to be punished. And mizeh biyadecha, it's even more pernicious because you're holding a staff. You're holding a staff and at the same time you're holding Lashon Hara in your hands and you really shouldn't be holding both as a leader. So this is the second message, is the Sneh, about true leadership, about believing in people, empowering people, showing them you feel that they can accomplish certain goals and overcome adversity. Another message is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tries to convince Moshe that he can convey and can persuade the Jewish people, he says, go gather the Zkenim and tell them, Pakod Yifkod, and tell them, Hashem Elokeinu Nikra Aleinu. Very strange word, Nikra Aleinu, Nun, Kuf, Reish, Hei. So Rashi says, Lashon Mikra. Right, something that happened circumstantially, randomly, without any planning. V'chein v'yikar Elokim, Hashem appears to Bilam in a random, unplanned fashion. V'anochi ikareko, Bilam says, I will happen to arrive at a certain location. Maybe Hashem will be. So it's strange that the first Gilei Shechina to Moshe is described to the Zakenim in a Bilam-like fashion, which means that this is restarting the legacy of Gilei Shechina. The Avos only experienced Gilei Shechina after they had Bris Milah. So the first Gilei Shechina was Avram. Vayera lev Hashem b'lanim amrei, v'yoshe pesach ha'olka chom hayom, v'har Hashem yirah. After Avram, Yitzchak has a Gilei Shechina. Yaakov has a Gilei Shechina. But now it's been 200 years. And now the Jews are downtrodden. And now the Jews have become paganistic. And now the Jews have forgotten their tradition. So part of it is not just punishing the Egyptians. Part of it is teaching the Jewish people about Gilei Shechina, what it means to encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is a starter version. This is the Jewish people not fully understanding. And it could be a starter version for Moshe. Remember, Moshe wasn't born with the silver of prophecy in his tongue. Moshe Rabbeinu was struggling throughout. Ramban calls Moshe Rabbeinu a Tiron Lenevi'im. Part of what makes Moshe so spectacular is he ascends to the level of being constantly pe'al pe'a dabrabo, of constantly being muchan for nevuah, as the Rambam writes. So this is that first Gilei Shechina. It appears in a sneh, so it's not a direct interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's through something that you can't really appreciate or fully understand. It's a mystery of the sneh. There's a distance. It's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu appearing to man. And the language that's used, at least in the way it's described to the Zakenim, we don't know whether it's just a way to describe it to the Zakenim so that they could start to wrap their heads around Gilei Shechina, or it's actually describing the caliber of the Gilei Shechina to Moshe Rabbeinu. But it is an inferior level of Gilei Shechina, and it's conveyed by a Bilam-like term of Nikra. We will yet see in Sefer Shemos more advanced, higher caliber forms of Gilei Shechina, particularly in Mitzrayim. Kechatzos HaLaila Ani Yareh B'toch Mitzrayim. Remember, Pesach night was the first Gilei Shechina for Am Yisrael collectively. We say it every year in the Gadol, in the Haggadah. V'tzien Hashem Elokeinu Misham B'yad Chazaka V'zroah Netuyah Uvemara Gadol. Anyone remember the language of the Haggadah? Uvemara Gadol? Anyone remember the drasha in Seir Lamad? Uvemara Gadol Zu Gilei Shechina Shenemar Hanisa Lekim Levo Lekachas Gadol Begoyim Begoyim Masas Zav Matzgusher Pasuk in Veschanan. So the word, the Mara Gadol, which we read in Kitavo, in that God is interpreted as Gilei Shechina. That's why we brought a carbon. It was the first Gilei Shechina. Carbon Pesach was a Mekabel Gilei Shechina. In fact, the word Pesach doesn't mean Hashem passed over. Hashem hovered over our houses because he was Megale Shechina. Since he hovered over, the Malach HaMavis couldn't come in, and effectively our houses were passed over for the punishment. And the Passover part of Pesach doesn't mean that Hashem jumped over our houses. Hashem hovered over our houses, and the effect was that there was a skipping of death. Death, 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 no death, where the Jews were living. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe in the Sneh with a language that doesn't represent the full force of Moshe's ultimate nevuah, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu will appear to Moshe, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu will appear to the Jewish people, Zeki Levi and Ve'elo Ke'aviv Aramenu. One more quick Rashi, when Moshe departs from the Vayigal HaYelad, Moshe grows up and he leaves the house and he sees all the Egyptians and he sees them torturing the Jewish people. So, what does Rashi write? Let's just find the Rashi, I'm sorry. Vayar b'sivlosam. He sees their suffering. Moshe leaves the palace. Vayar b'sivlosam. Vayar ish mitzri makeh. So why is the Torah Vayar b'sivlosam? Vayar ish mitzri makeh. So Rashi interprets Vayar b'sivlosam, fascinating language. Nasan einav v'libo lios meitzer aleihem. Sympathy is a decision. It's not an instinct. Anger is an instinct. You can control it, you can flash it. You think sympathy is also an instinct. When you see someone suffering, you feel sympathy. The answer is you can decide whether to feel sympathy. You can decide to become callous. You can decide to look the other way, figuratively or actually. You can decide to harden your heart. You can decide it's not going to affect you. Or you can make a decision to identify with someone and engage in their suffering. Moshe makes a decision, Rashi says. Nasan einav velibo. He decides. He puts his mind, his eyes, and his heart, lios meitzer aleihem. He doesn't say, I'm an Egyptian. I come from a comfortable house. I fly business class. I don't have to worry about the suffering. These are people, these are plebeians. These are regular people. He decides. Nasan einav velibo. Remember that language. Nasan einav velibo, lios meitzer aleihem. Why am I saying this? Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu later on, in Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayishma Elokim es Nachasam, Vayizkor Elokim es Briso, Avraham es Yitzchak ves Yaakov, Vayar Elokim, what does Rashi write? Vayeda Elokim, remember Vayar b'sivlosam, Moshe makes a decision, Nasan Eina V'libo, Hashem makes a decision, Vayeda Elokim, listen to Rashi's language, Perek, Pasuk Chav Hei, Vayeda Elokim, Nasan Aleihem Leiv. V'lo helim einav. Hashem made a decision to listen to us. Nasan, remember Moshe Nasan eino v'libo? Kodesh Baruch Hu is Nasan aleihem leiv. Which means that we can trigger our Kodesh Baruch Hu's reciprocal behavior. If we sympathize with people, we make that decision, Kodesh Baruch Hu then sympathizes with us. If we're people of sympathy, Hashem then identifies with our suffering. If we're callous to other people, then just like we don't pay attention to other people, Hashem won't pay attention. The exact same language in Rashi. Compare the two Rashi's, Nasan Einav Alibo, Vayar B'Sivlo Sam, Nasan Aleihem Leiv. A little bit later, there's also a third Rashi, if I'm not mistaken, later in the Sneh, where Hashem tells Moshe that I'm hearing your suffering, V'gam Shematis Nakasam, same language Rashi. I've decided to listen to their suffering. So it's not just when the Torah describes Hashem listening, but when Hashem tells Moshe why I'm listening, is I'm deciding to listen. He doesn't say because you listen, but it's the same language. So Moshe Rabbeinu determines or dictates HaKadosh Baruch Hu's behavior. So we talked about the Sneh being a lowly bush, symbolizing any sort of suffering. We talked about, help me here, we talked about Moshe's tzaras and Moshe's the stick. Hashem doesn't just deliver tzaras, but before the tzaras is delivered, he says, you're holding a scepter. You're holding a scepter, and at the same time, you're holding Lashon Hara. Maze biyodecha, mize biyodecha. You're holding both, and that's not a healthy combination. We spoke about the unscheduled appearance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the random, serendipitous, vayikar. The first nevuah for Moshe is described as nikur alecha. Ultimately, Moshe will transform the world of nevuah. We spoke about Moshe's decision to sympathize with people. Remember, what makes Moshe such a fascinating person, especially in Shemos, is the combination between ideology and compassion. It's very hard to have that combination. Some people are very, very people-oriented. Their minds don't go to more abstract, long-term ideas. Sometimes people go to long-term ideas, they have a harder time sympathizing with people. Everything's ideological. It's really that combination of Moshe that he sympathizes, but he also is able to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Sneh. It's a really, really interesting story, since I thought about it. Ophir Shire, who's the father of Gilad Shire, Olav Shalom, one of the three boys who were killed. So he, Ophir is an alumnus of the yeshiva, so he came to speak to the yeshiva on Yom HaZikaron. And the entire yeshiva was in the kitchen last year, and he spoke. He was talking about the shiva. And one of the stories he told about Rav Lichtenstein was, and it's very characteristic of Rav Lichtenstein, is that all the rabbanim were walking in to the shiva and giving him very highfalutin ways to deal with the suffering, deal with the trauma. Your son is a Kiddush Hashem, and he's sitting with Rabbi Akiva, and he's a Harogei Malchus, and he saved Am Yisrael. And Ophir said, Rav Aaron just came in and gave Ophir the sense that he understood what it means to lose a child. Because for Ophir, his son wasn't Rabbi Akiva, wasn't Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, it was just my son. I missed my son. I'm crying over the loss of my son. And sometimes I call it the ideology train. You get on the ideology train, and it's just an endless train. It's a what do they call it? A train that doesn't stop. What's it? There's a phrase for that. Runaway train. It's a runaway train because ideology. Sometimes ideology masks real feelings, and sometimes you have to be able to identify with people's real feelings. Sometimes when we suffer in Eretz Yisrael, you go to Levayas, and it becomes about the settlements and about politics, and there are real people here, and there are real people suffering, and there are real people who died, and the ability to be both ideological and compassionate. It's very, very important, and Moshe Rabbeinu combines it. Miriam combines it. I spoke about this last night in the Chug. Miriam's waiting for Moshe. She waits because she knows Moshe will be saved, but she also waits because she just can't turn her back on her brother. That combination to be both. Part to be both compassionate, sympathetic, and also have that higher gear of ideology and make sure the two don't obscure each other. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Have a good day.